With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, what's up? Thank you for tuning in today's show. David and I will talk about game ones of the NBA playoff series. As you guys know, they have tipped off and we've got some exciting things happen. All the home teams have won so far, so they're up to 1-0 leads. What's the status of Joel Embiid for game two? Can anyone stop Damian Lillard and the Milwaukee Bucks? The Boston Celtics are on a freight train right now, blowing out the Miami Heat. All that and more. As always, thank you for tuning in, subscribing. Please share with your friends and stay tuned for today's show. Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
All is well. How are you?
Good. Playoffs are here. We got a weekend of games. Game one's officially in the book. And you know what happens after game one, David. Overreaction time. Oh my God, this team stinks. They're going to get run out of the building. This team's so much better than we thought. Who are we kidding? And all the things that people love to say after one game. And one of the things that you love to say to everybody is, let's curb our enthusiasm a little bit. Let's calm down. It's only been one game. and we're going to dive into all of that today. Let's start, David, with the games yesterday, Heat versus Celtics. Now, look, the Celtics have been the best team in the NBA all year. I don't think there was a point, David, where they were out of the number one spot for us in our top fives.
Oh, there might have been. Yeah, there might have been in part because they just lost a couple games, but it was early. Yeah.
They're just excellent. They won last night, 114-94. Really never looked threatened in that game. And so, you know, and we know, of course, to be fair to the Heat, they're playing without Jimmy Butler, which that matters.
And Terry Rozier and Josh Richardson. Right.
Correct. Those things matter to that team. But, you know, Spo with duct tape and crazy glue and wristband dirt, he finds a way to get his teams to grind. David, even with all that, I personally just don't see how this Miami Heat team beats this Boston Celtics team. In this series, I think it's going to be a Celtics sweep.
Yeah, or a gentleman's sweep, you know, five games. Yeah, they're not on the same levels. But we're going to call a timeout. I got three. Do I have three? I'm
going to do one now. Yeah, three timeouts. Because
I want to go back to your introduction.
Oh, okay.
Okay. As we experience life, you and I, in today's world with, you know, 24/7 media and Twitter and Facebook and I don't really get on Instagram much for that kind of stuff. I've read stories and articles and listened to people talking about how, you know, the media has got an agenda and all this crazy shit, but also that it can sensationalize things and all of that. And I normally try to consume the non-sensational aspects of media. I'm worried less about analysis unless it's sober, probing analysis of Middle East, of which I have some experience with, having been there and been raised Jewish and whatever, or all the other important things we're dealing with. I don't need to hear some commentator who studied broadcasting telling me how things are. They can report facts to me, and the people I listen to do that. And then I listen to the smarter people than myself for analysis, and I figure things out. And I don't feel let down by that because I pay attention to the right people. I know our listeners and readers are being well served. And because this weekend I tried to just take it all in and I was horrified to include what you just kind of referenced. The this is all that matters now, this first game. We've seen what we need to see. Therefore, we know the answer. It's just silly. It's just not smart stuff. And players are smarter than that. And talking to some guys who lost over the weekend, some of them realize they're just better than us. And some realize, oh, we didn't play very well. But obviously, those are all road teams. But, we're going to be all right. We like some things. And I feel the same way. Curb your enthusiasm, those of you that that want. Also, curb your panic. Unless you're probably in Miami, which you won't be panicking. You won't be panicking anyway.
Right, you got the
spanking you thought you'd get.
Yeah.
They're just better than you. If they had everybody, I don't know who'd win that series. Probably Boston.
Right.
But it'd be a battle. It was a battle there. Miami fought. They made it like, well, should Joe Mazzulla keep his guys in? Down 15 with four to play? He did. We'll get to that, I know. So we're going to do our best to try to get a somewhat measured response to what we saw after one game. And so to get to your first thing about Boston, nothing happened over the weekend to make me think they aren't likely to win the East.
Yep.
And even favoring them over Denver, although I don't have to make that decision yet. We have a long way to go before then. But those are the two best teams.
Yeah, for sure. Joe Mazzulla, I think in one of his comments before this week leading up to the game said, the way we play, Miami will have a math problem. And they did, David, in that game. The Celtics were plus 30 from three. And, you often look at numbers like that and it's just math, right? If we're going to continually to beat you by that kind of margin from the highest scoring area on the floor, and you have no other way of making that up, whether that be getting the free throw line more, getting second chance opportunities, it's just math. Like, there are not enough possessions for you to beat that kind of number. And, again, and that's what the Celtics have played all year, by the way. They have fired up threes like it's nobody's business. And again, that's what they did. And look, even if the Heat shoot better from three, which they can, of course, I just don't think they have enough guys who can spread everybody out and do it, right? They're just limited right now. And Boston, has been the best team for a reason all year. And I think they just showed what they showed in game one.
I think we said on the show a couple weeks ago, I noticed that Bam Adebayo was starting to shoot some threes.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I know I noticed it. I don't know if I said it.
Yeah, we said it. Yep, you said it.
Okay. And that's interesting. Mm-hmm. He looks really good shooting him. I don't know why he wasn't before, but he is now. And he could, go 5 for 10 in a game. No one's expecting that.
Well, he's got to take more than two attempts like he took last game.
Exactly, which is really to the point of you guys have got to change the way you're playing some. I remember my very first year covering the NBA for ESPN was, I want to say, the 07-08 season. So that might have been, I think that was LeBron's first finals run.
When they lost to the Spurs.
Correct. Jeff Weltman and I were covering it for Scouts Inc. for ESPN. And I remember talking to my editors about, I don't think the Cleveland can win this series. They're playing the same way every single game. They're in those games, but they're expecting to out-execute that Spurs team late. And I think it's an unfair expectation. I just don't think they will. LeBron was very young, and the team was so-so, and it was the Spurs, in their prime, in a sense.
Yep,
so,
Tim Duncan, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm. You remember how that series ended up?
Sweet.
Correct. And so Miami can keep doing what they're doing and just say, we're going to out-execute them. And I'm going to say, you're going to lose in four games. And I love Spo. He's great. But Bam probably needs to take about 10 threes a game. And then maybe Boston will adjust. Maybe he won't. Maybe they'll adjust after four. I don't know. But yeah, absent something, a curveball. Like, you can't just keep throwing fastballs when you don't got the heater working. Now, if you have the heater working, you get to 102, 103. And maybe location's all that matters.
And you even still need some movement on that fastball, right? Because
Movement or just you got to pick your spots so well. But if you don't have your best stuff, they don't have their best stuff. This is a team that is not afraid to play zone. They didn't. They weren't afraid to. But, Boston, I think, we said this before, too. They remember what happened last year.
They sure do.
They came out and ended the game quickly.
I don't know if you saw, it was, I, like you, often don't listen to a lot of the sound going on during the game, but I did put it on for this where, you know, Tatum was mic'd up for the game and he was like, it was pregame. So he's, you know, in the corner warming up. And he's like, man, we waited a whole summer for this. And then he's like, we waited a whole preseason for this, a whole regular season for this, a whole playing, right? He's just going, and we're here now. Like, and so that's to your point of them remembering what happened last year and what happened 2 years ago when they were up 2-0 in the NBA finals, right?
Right. And it's not like Jrue Holiday hasn't had a disappointing loss to the Heat either.
Correct. Correct.
So, yeah, I think Miami knows what's coming.
I do as well. We're going to get back to this series in a second. But, David, something you said interests me, and it has to do with coaching. So you talk about coaching and how important it is, and this is as much coach league as it is players. And I, you know, like you, I'm a sports fan of other sports as well. World football, of course, baseball, a bunch of different stuff. But sports where tactics are important, right, in terms of what you're going to do. And one of the things I love about my favorite world football team, Real Madrid, is that they can play a multitude of different ways in order to win. And there's something to be said about if you're really elite at something, doubling down and doing that thing really well because it's hard to stop it. I think of the Warriors and their Cuisinart offense, right? When it's at its zenith, when they had everybody working. But then it's that thing about the elasticity, right? Which is, okay, we need to play a grinding out money game. We can do that. You want to fire up 43s again? We can do that too. So how important is it to build teams with that versatility versus, you know, this is what we're going to do and stick to it. And teams now in the playoffs realizing we need to go to a plan B, plan C, plan D, but we don't have the personnel and we can't all of a sudden now start chucking 53s a game because we're just not good at that.
I mean, I think every team wants more shooters. It'd be nice to have a post presence offensively. I think it's the better teams have balance. So they're not, you know, think about balance. So balance would be offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding. It's offense and defense, right? It's be able to defend the paint and the perimeter. And then, of course, your balance inside, outside, outside, inside offensively. And you also like to have some depth so that you're not so dependent upon any one guy. The star is the star. But it'd be nice to make sure you have a second or third string quarterback to throw in there, a point guard, or even if it's an off guard, just to kind of manage things. And it doesn't mean you're going to win a series. It just gives you more chances. If what you're best at is not as good as what someone else is best at playing against, they know what they're going to do. You need to have a pivot point, and that's based on personnel, but also strategy, your systems in place, your reps in place, how have you played. I happen to think it's why you should develop a bench all year long. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
So that you have that kind of depth and they've got trust. Players trust each other. Coaches trust players. Players trust coaches. But I think, you know, if you have Denver last year was going to be a force no matter what with Jokic and their starting five. Golden State, as you said, that's what the Cuisinart is based on, is balance. Better than Boston, we have ways to get either or. You really extend on our perimeter, we're going to slice you up without even dribbling the ball at the basket, at least not too often. I think Boston's a little bit more normal in terms of their mm-hmm. offense rather than innovative. Mm-hmm. They just have super talent. I mean, yeah. They're talented. You know, so good. Five is so talented. So, I mean, and Jaylen Brown came out like someone had slapped him in the face before the game. He started out like just aggressive. And so they got edge. And that's the other thing you want. You want balance with that too, because you don't want to be too high, too low. You don't want to be manic. Like, mm-hmm. You can't all be Bobby Portis and Pat Bev.
Imagine a team with just Bobby Portis's and Pat Bev's.
Imagine the amount of technical free throws on a team like that. Yeah. You got to have balance, I think, anyway. So that's where emotional maturity comes in, emotional IQ.
Yep.
And I really try to watch coaches when teams are going on a run against them or when they're on a run. You know, you want to see a measured and normally in the NBA they are, because they're coaching men, not young men like you do in college. And the college's coaches kind of feel like they're the show more anyway.
Oh my God.
NBA guys are
screaming at people. It's like, dude, calm down.
Coach Dagno, he looks like he's a rec ball coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just super kind of a Bill Murray grin on his face. And
yeah. Yeah.
And That dude's really good, though.
Yeah, listen, we'll get to that kid.
Very impressed with how he develops his players.
No, I liked it a lot. In that game, which was pretty much decided by the third quarter, well, really by the first half, but whatever. JJ Redick was on the broadcast, and he said Tyler Hero was in late in the game because he had a bad game, and if he makes some shots late in a blowout, he'll feel better for game two. Now, you said to me and us this morning on our call, JJ is right with his thought process, but is wrong. So tell us what you mean by that.
So JJ is right in reality, but he should be wrong in practicality, in practice, or in process. Our players should not be so dependent on a made shot in any one game. What I teach, and I think I've said this before on our show, and it's going to be in my book. Hopefully, I remember. I don't remember if it's in the chapters yet or not, which I'm starting very soon. If Tails goes on a 10-game winning streak, heads ain't worried.
Not worried.
And so that's how our players should be, especially someone like Tyler Hero, who can really shoot. JJ's right. There's no question it can impact. I would argue, though, that it only works as long as you keep making shots. So you get to game two and you miss the first shot, I don't think he even thinks for 1 second about game one. Mm-hmm. I just don't. But between game one and game two, or between games in the postseason, guys are getting hundreds of shots up in between. And so you make some shots at the end of game one. Great. You don't follow up with that in your next few days in practice, and it's just kind of feeling funky, which it does sometimes. It feels mm-hmm. a big part of this game. Mm-hmm. It's why we say, anyway, basketball is jazz. Jazz is about feel to some degree anyway, as opposed to classical music. So, or even any music in some cases. So I think that feel can be long gone by the time game two starts, no matter how game one ended. JJ is also protecting. I don't think he's doing this on purpose. Coaches leaving guys in. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know what Joe was doing, leaving guys in a blowout. I don't know what Miami was doing. I think Spo was trying to get some traction. And I'm not second-guessing him. I think he feels like I don't think he can think we're going to not win a championship if we play these guys too much.
Right.
Just naive to think Miami's winning a championship. So Let's just find a way to get a win. And if I have to play him extra in game one to get going for game two, that's what I'm going to do. See what happens.
Yeah, Tatum played 41 minutes last night, which I thought was surprising. I'm like, yeah, I don't two nights. Know that yeah. you need to play 40-plus minutes in a game that you were up by double digits pretty early on. But, you know, hey, I'm going to – Joe Mazzulla knows more than me, so you okay. I'm going to let you roll with that. I don't know that that was wise. You know, I wasn't going to talk about this series now, but let's, because you mentioned confidence and how Tails goes on a run, Hedson's not worried. Pacers Bucks. Damian Lillard was super hot in that game. Unreal. 35 in the first half. By the way, 0 points in the second half, just FYI. And the Pacers got it to within 12. And if they had hit one of those wide open threes and got it single digits, I think the Bucks start getting a little more nervous, and we might see a different game. It never happens. I think there is something psychological, David, about a double-digit lead going to single. Even if it's 12 to 9, it's just like it's something like in the back of your mind. Maybe not consciously, but shit, now it's just single digits. It never happened. The Pacers missed a bunch of wide-open threes, but Tyrese Halliburton did not have a good game, and he has not been playing well since
January.
Yeah.
January 8th, maybe, when he'd been up and down since then.
So now it's more than just a one game thing. So is this a confidence thing affecting him now? And if that's the case, because we talked about it, even without Giannis, this team's going to have a really tough time winning this series, which I think they can if Halliburton doesn't start playing better.
Well, part of why I didn't play better, and I've not broken the game down from his perspective yet. I'll watch more of it today. Is what Milwaukee's doing, picking him up earlier, trying to curb the pace of the Pacers. But he's not looked like himself for stretches since the injury. He just hasn't. He has moments and minutes, but not quarters and halves and games.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. I mean, there has been some good quarters for sure. And so, yeah, they're right now that team is constructed to be a Tyrese Halliburton-led team. Siakam was crazy good. Obviously,
very good last night.
36 and 25 shots. That's not how the team is built. That's just he's just talented and he made shots. And the Bucks struggle to match up with him, historically speaking. They need Tyrese to, what do you have, 9 points?
Yeah, he only took 5 shots in that game. I mean, it wasn't good.
Yeah, they have some things they can do. I mean, they have another point guard named Nembhard, and they have Siakam is a very good passer. They could get Tyrese off the ball earlier and get and create some stuff for him. I'd be shocked if they're not thinking about some stuff like that right now. But I wrote about this and we talked about it. When his three is not dropping, his ability to go by you for a layup is severely limited because it's the threat of making the three off a step back, step sideways dribble, or just catch and shoot that enables him. He's not Derrick Rose with the ball, just isn't. So he's got to make those shots. And if he does, I mean, Indiana's absolutely in this series.
I agree. He was 4-7 last night. During the broadcast, the broadcast crew made a big deal about this, as they often do about stuff like this. So they talked to Doc ahead of the game, and he said that he had the reserves of his squad when they were trying to mimic the Pacers' pace. When they were doing full scrimmages this week, instead of after a made bucket taking the ball out of bounds, when the made bucket was there, they would just take it right out of the net and rip down the other end just to simulate what it's like to play against that pace. How big of a deal is it to do stuff like that for a team when you're preparing for a team that plays at pace?
I like it. As I told you guys on our show today, I think by 1990, I was doing that for my high school teams because my first team, we were the Running Rebels. And then when I was helping a team here where I live and we were trying to play super fast, I just said, okay, we had many rules. One of them was we're never in summer in pickup games, not in practice, but in pickup games, it would be grab and go. Yeah, grab and go just to get used to just racing. I don't think that it mattered all that much because Indiana really didn't run great. They were not hitting the ball ahead as often as they were before. I thought they had a couple guys that did not look at all affected. Siakam being the most obvious one. Mm-hmm. People forget Nembhard. He did play on a team that went undefeated into the very last game of his junior season, lost in the championship game. It's a hell of a stage. Just making the Final Four is a hell of a stage. But that pressure, those last 10 games, I don't know this, but I'm only guessing they were feeling it. And so he, guarding Dame is no day at the beach. That was not easy to do. But he didn't look afraid to me. I think he had 3 assists, no turnovers in the game. Neesmith did the classic jump and then dribble the ball. That's a turnover. He did that like first minute of the game. Miles Turner's first shot, banked off the board, no rim. They looked like a mess. And so tight legs don't run fast. They look nervous and scared, which is weird because they're grown men, but they're young grown men. And there is a different feel. There's a different vibe. Listen, NBA crowds normally suck in the regular season. Compared to the games you watch.
Yeah.
Compared to the games that I have watched around the world.
Yeah.
Fans are fanatical.
Fanatical.
In NBA games, there are exceptions. Mm-hmm. When Carlos Arroyo mm-hmm. was playing for the Magic. Yep. And the Puerto Rican flags were waving. That place was hopping. On a regular Tuesday in January. It was awesome. I've been to Miami Heat games where I thought the crowd was electric in the regular season.
Yeah.
That is not common. But playoff atmosphere is mm-hmm. fantastic.
Very different.
Like, that we'll get to that game last night, that very last game. That's a fun atmosphere right mm-hmm. there. Because mm-hmm. you can feel the pressure. And the fact that Milwaukee hit him in the mouth early and never staggered made it a fun game. Had Indiana started that way, just have a good start. Maybe it'll be 5-0 or 7-1 or something.
Right.
The crowd's a little bit anxious, which adds to the tenseness for the Bucks, mm-hmm. and maybe things will be different. But in general, your question is, I think those things are good. I don't think it's a hokey. I don't think it's just a trick or a ploy. I think it's a way to remind us, guys, you score. There's no kiss the sky and point to mom and get your ass back on defense. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got it for my recruiting business. We have high school players. And so we've got a nice quality junior who made a big three in a corner game, in a game in the corner. And my partner, Pete, sent me the clip because he normally watches games more than me right now. And he's like, because after he made the three, he did this. I couldn't see what it was because it's high school video.
Guys for the three. Yeah.
I'm very spoiled with what I get from my NBA guys. This is something probably his mom in the stands, whatever, the team. Yeah. He was doing something and he's like, what do you think about that? And I said, well, I'm obviously not crazy about it, but it's only one we've seen him do. Let's just hang on a little bit, but there's no time. against the Pacers. Get back. I always say that when I'm coaching guys, just next play, next play, next play. Yeah, it's funny.
To me, David, and I know you haven't broken the game down totally, but you watched enough of it. The Pacers shoot better. I think they're fine, right? They're plus the Bucks were plus 18 on them from three. Like a lot of those shots were open threes. They just missed. Like,
well, I will say that some of them were open because Milwaukee didn't mind.
Chose to who would be open.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing. The randomness of the Pacers' offense versus the deliberate attempts by Milwaukee to limit the good spot. Siakam only took one corner three, he made it. But he's money from there. Nembhard took, I think, one. He made it. He's even better from there, 50-some-odd percent. Lots of guys on Tyrese all the time. They were more than happy to let Miles keep chucking. And Miles Schroeder is a 40-plus percent three-point shooter.
He is.
But those aren't the playoffs. So they wanted him. They didn't care if Nesmith shot. They were. I don't know if they were praying, but I think I caught one guy praying for Jalen Smith to shoot the three. Sure. Not in last night. They were a mess. So I think they've got to clean up some mistakes they made on Dame. They fouled him some when maybe they weren't fouls, but they called it. So you got to deal with it. They lost him a few times. Even if he missed, they still lost him. They've got to clean up some things to make it tougher on Dame. But Middleton played great, and that's a problem for them. They're going to have to put Siakam on him because he overwhelmed Nesmith, and I thought he might. I wrote it, apparently. I don't remember doing it, but I remember thinking he's going to have trouble guarding Middleton. And he did last night. Nesmith was just bad last night. He's not a bad player, though. So, but to your point, they lost by 15. If they make five more threes in the game, they're still below 33% from three. And they're a much better shooting team than they were, much better.
Correct.
37% from three. So they could have made five more threes and tied the game, and you would not have said it was a great shooting night. That's how bad they were shooting. So that, to your point, is well taken.
All right, moving on to Mavs-Clippers. Clippers won that game. Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, David, combined for 64. Rest of the team, 33 combined. Not a recipe for success. I thought the Clippers defended well. James Harden was really good. 28, 8, and 8, I want to say, was his stat
one,
line.
One turnover, I think.
Yeah, one turnover. We've talked about it before. James Harden's playoff failure. There have been moments where he's not been good, but it's a bit overblown. But he's like drastically horrible in the playoffs. He's had plenty of good playoff games. He had another good one last night. Clippers off to a good start without Kawhi, mind you. Again, I don't know what his status is for game two, but I think it was a good start for the Clippers at home.
Yeah, I like Paul George. He was engaged on the sidelines there. It made me think that he thinks he's going to come back. Like
Kawhi, isn't a loss. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought. It's not a lost cause for Kawhi. Yeah. That's what I thought when I was watching it. I thought Dallas played with no force at all, almost the whole game. PJ Washington started out a little scrappy on James, but it's not a great matchup for them. And James just carved him up. He really just carved him up. He got into paint, made the right passes, made the right plays, hit some big threes. He attacked Luka, which was smart. Those other Mavericks players, we'll see. You know, they were playing great.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's just, everything's just, you know, we can look at one game, but we can look at series of games. Dallas has been playing well for a while.
Yeah. Just the end when they knew they were locked in their seat and they started resting guys. So it's that point, David, of when you're on a roll, what's that fine line between, all right, we know we're going to be the five seed. We're staying there. They had it locked up.
Yeah.
Now we start resting. So we get out of rhythm, right? Those guys were clicking. Everybody was firing, doing all their stuff. Then they've been out for a while and they had a week off. So how much did that affect them?
It definitely could. I'm not going to say it's not possible that it couldn't affect them. Rest is valuable too. And for so sure. They got good rest. It just didn't help them. It didn't help them. Those other guys, they've got to play better. Gafford had two fouls early and got hurt a little bit. It just never seemed to be the same. Poor Derek Lively. You know his story. Mm-hmm. Did they talk? They did on air, yeah. Mm-hmm. A young man that I help that's a college player. He's very close with Derek. They even lived together for a while. And he spent 4 days with him in Dallas after his mom died. Poor kid. I saw him smiling during the game. Yeah, I got to root for a guy like that.
For sure.
Just so glad his mom got to see him be a first-round pick and got at least some joy. Yeah, it's fucking sucks. Nevertheless, they've got the work cut out for him. The Clippers, we know what they're capable of being. And so this goes to the same point of, okay, Dallas has been playing really well. Had a really bad game after a couple of games didn't count. Can they find their way back? Which typically you'd think yes. However, they're not playing Detroit. And that's where a lot of these streaks are, is you play a good game for a game or two, but then you play a couple of bad teams and keep the streak going. So especially at the end of the year when some of these teams really are trying to lose, actively trying to lose. That's not the case. The Clippers are not doing that. And can they keep going? I don't know. I think it's possible. I think I picked Mavericks to win the series without Kawhi, and I still feel pretty good about it. But the Clippers showed me that they're not afraid to go through Zubats and make things happen. He was terrific.
Yeah.
And Dallas has to make an adjustment, has to make some adjustments and play better.
Yeah. And, you know, even without Kawhi, we still thought it would go seven, right? It's a long series. We think this is just two teams that are just have a lot of talent on the floor, and this is a back and forth. Love some of the stuff that Ty Lue did in that game. David, something's RJ was on that broadcast, and Richard Jefferson, and he said the team that loses game one has the advantage. And his thought process is that, well, when you lose, you have shit you need to work on because it didn't work out well. The team that it's in game one, that wins game one, if it's a blowout, might be likely to be like, well, things went well, so we're going to keep doing what we're doing. That's my assumption as to what he means. What do you think about that statement?
I mean, it's absurd. How many – what's the percentage of teams that win the series when they win game one? Do you know it?
I imagine it's pretty high.
75, I read.
Yeah, yeah. So three out of four.
Yeah. So if he had said winning game one – is a big advantage, I would say he's right. Losing it, no. I mean, you can make a point of, hey, we got our attention. I spoke to some guys, like I said, over the weekend who lost their games. Okay, we know we have to change some things. We also know that teams who win can relax, just like the regular season. Human nature tends to just kind of relax. But I'd rather relax already being up 1-0.
Correct.
Then have to fight it up down. So again, there's also teams that win the first game of the series typically are the home team, and that's an advantage.
Every home team won. Yeah.
Every home team won, and they all have three home games guaranteed to come if it goes seven. So that's why the math is in their favor. But yeah, the teams that were absolutely overmatched and will continue to be starts and ends with Miami. I don't think there's any other team that has no chance to win a series except for I don't think the Heat do. I don't even put the Pelicans in that category, in part because of how young the Thunder are and really reliant on system and SGA. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a path for New Orleans, and I don't know how long Zion's out for. Yep. What if he comes back in game three? Yeah, it changes everything. I don't know what the word is. I've not read about it, but yeah. Yeah, I don't think RJ's right. Like RJ very much, I don't think he's right.
Well, you just mentioned it, David. Let's go to the best game of the opening weekend, which was Thunder Pelicans 94-92. That went down to literally the buzzer. Cason Wallace had a nice defensive stand against CJ McCollum. McCollum got the shot off, but Wallace poked the ball away, so causing him to get his timing off on the dribble. Then he had to do like a pump fake, like lean in from 22 feet. To get a shot. I mean, it hit rim, so it could have gone in, but that is a low percentage shot. And so if that's the shot that you have to win every game, I think the Thunder will take that. we've done as well a job as we could. Look, we talked about this Pelicans team, David. They are long, athletic. They can guard. They're feisty. Willie really has them believing. You know, Shea had 28 points, 11 to 24. So, you know, not like 50% shooting from the field, but just under it. Didn't hit his threes. Herb Jones, I thought, really one of the better defenders we know, obviously, in the league, really just hassled him. And again, you're never shutting out great players. Like, this isn't pitching baseball. Like, you don't do that. It's, can I make it bothersome for this player? And I thought Jones had his moments again, knocking him off his timing a little bit, making finishing a little bit harder, all things just to make it a little tighter, a little bit more difficult. I thought he did a good job. But if we get six more games like this, woo, what a series. I'm excited.
Yeah, I watched the whole fourth quarter this morning. It was really a train wreck.
They were bad.
Mistakes, entertaining as hell.
They're young, I feel like, right? So young teams just going to
Both teams did some really dumb things. And Larry Nance missed it, but I thought it should have been a wide-open dunk.
Yes.
The Pelicans had some disastrous turnovers late in games after securing the rebound. I don't think OKC ever scored off it, but it was a kind of a sign of where they were at mentally. I also don't know why It was CJ, who did play fine in the game, versus Brandon Ingram backing down Dort. He would have definitely got a good shot off.
Or fouled, maybe.
I say definitely. More than likely, anyway. Or fouled, right. Can't shake and bake Dort, but you can back him down and just get a turnaround jumper. Kaysen Wallace did good. CJ also, his crossover was casual, and that's why Kaysen was able to knock it away. Still, the Pelicans had many chances. They were down three for a long time. They took a lead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Took a four-point lead, maybe. They were down three for a number of possessions and just couldn't make a shot in and out. Bad shots, turnovers. It was the game of the weekend for sure.
We always talk about how the playoffs are so different. And it isn't like, everyone will go back to the Pelicans run 2 years ago when they pushed the then one-seeded Suns to six games. But that was then, right? They didn't make the playoffs last year, right? Pelicans didn't make the playoffs last year. They don't have they're not littered with a ton of experience over there. I mean, CJ, okay, he's been to the playoffs a bunch of Portland, but that's really it. And the Thunders, we know, besides Shea, no one. Oh, Gordon Hayward and Lou Dort a little bit. But their main guys they count on, not a ton. And I thought, you saw moments, David, where I was like, oh, it's a little bit different. The stage is a little bit different here. And Greg Anthony said on the broadcast, players need to understand in the playoffs the different nature to which the games are, right? The refs tend to let them be more physical. And if that is the case, you as a player need to be mindful of, I have to be much more secure and stronger with the basketball and mindful of these things. That little bump's not going to get called. Otherwise, if I lose it, it's a turnover. They're going the other way. What do you make of that idea that players need to ratchet up their focus and intensity, particularly their ball security in the postseason because of the physicality?
In some years, I think that's accurate. I'm not convinced the games. I watched all the games to some degree, some of them more than others all weekend. I don't ever felt like they were called any differently when the regular season was called late. The late regular season,
yes,
late
they started. Year, yep.
Mm-hmm. They weren't calling as much. I think the biggest question, the biggest difference between the two is the amount of information teams are giving their players about the opponent and ourselves before each game. So before game one, a lot of work on what we're best at, what we need to stay away from, pretty good amount of stuff on what they're best at, what we want to stay away from with them, what force them to do, more so than a typical regular season game for obvious reasons. And then we just keep doing it. Just keep doing it, keep studying it. There's no surprises. You know the players individually better, collectively better, the team as well. I mean, that's the biggest thing. The heightened intensity is real. There's a heightened intensity typically, universally felt through the players, not just – there's some guys that are hot. Pet Bev is the same way no matter what. He isn't any more intense. I love that. Some guys are that way. You've got to be ready for that. And the fact that you really are at the end of it, you're at the end of the rope, Every loss is one loss towards that four that sends you home. Mm-hmm. These guys don't want to go home. They want to win. So they feel pressure. It's a different pressure. It's almost like the regular season is about me, get my number so I can get paid.
Right.
The postseason is about we. Mm-hmm. And I think of John Feinstein's great book, A Good Walk Spoiled, which I highly recommend if you like golf. Have you ever read it? About
no.
So it's about the Ryder Cup. It might be his first golf book. He wrote a million sports books.
Yep.
Oh, it's a fantastic, like Davis Love and Fred Couples. It's way back in the 90s. Oh, it's fantastic. And these guys all talk about the 4 foot putt. When you're putting for me, I make a living doing that.
Right.
The 4 foot putt playing for us. Yeah. Ooh. So much pressure. Wives are on the course watching and stuff. And so it's just, you feel it. You feel you're letting your team down, your community down even more than the regular season, which is more about entertainment, I think. So it's a real thing.
And you mentioned the amount of information. Again, these young guys on OKC, this is the first time most of them are getting the binders with all the stuff to study. They're probably like, what am I, back in college? Jesus Christ. And like, that's probably going to play out the toll on you too. There's a lot of stuff I got to remember.
I don't know if I said this on our show Thursday, but a player told me about his very first playoff experience. This guy's an older guy. He's been in a million playoff games, and he was playing in one, and he got the book.
It's huge.
And he was confused. And I don't remember him telling me this now, but I think he was thinking, is this for all the potential teams we could play?
Nope.
And found out it's just for our opponent. And we, yeah. And these guys have big brains. These players have big brains, typically. Big brains. So there's a lot they're processing. And then you kind of get reference points, too.
Mm-hmm.
And now by game 2, 3, 4, I got a really good feel. As it becomes slugfest. Slogs.
Oh, the playoffs are a different animal, as they say. All right, folks, we'll be back after a brief commercial break. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys, Gerard Hector from True Hoop here. You ever have a situation where a friend, a partner, or spouse does something and you sweep it under the rug like, no big deal? And then something else happens and you don't mention it because you don't want to make waves or ruffle feathers. But what happens is we end up holding on to these things and they become stressors. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. I've been open about this in the past, and you guys know I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I. And both are helpful for developing positive and coping skills and knowing how and when to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the very best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/truehoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/truehoop.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, David, we had some games on Saturday. Those were all the games Sunday night that we just went through. Imagine Cavaliers, and I said this to you on our call this morning. What would a mature offensive player look like for the Orlando Magic? And I don't even mean an all-star. Just someone who knows what the hell to do and how to get them into decent shot every time down the floor. Holy hell. If they had that player, David, they're 100% winning this series against the Cavs because they play good enough defense. But, man, they don't have that right now, and it's painful to watch sometimes.
No, Paolo's their point guard, and he's really a talented player but should not have that responsibility all the time. Love Jalen Suggs. Love his energy. He's a souped-up version of Jose Alvarado. Bigger, more athletic, more talented overall, younger. But he doesn't have the mindset. I think Alvarado might have a better mindset than be a point guard than Jalen right now. Maybe Jalen could learn it. Yeah, I told you on the phone, maybe Fred VanVleet on this team would have been solid. So, yeah, they know what they have to do in the offseason. Unless Anthony Black can be that guy. Right. Can't shoot right now. So
right.
He's not – and he's young, very 20 years old. But I think they're thinking he can be our long-term point guard. I think that.
I thought, the Cavaliers, to me – Donovan Mitchell just really was able to, and that's what we talked about at the beginning was the difference. Like, they have a guy who can just get a shot. And again, he's a mature offensive player, right? Get to his spot, can hit that float. He just knows how to, and they have multiple shot makers there. Sterling can hit shots. It's just so different. But I still thought, despite all that, Orlando really guarded the hell out of them in that game. And if they could just find a way to score easily, they got back into it even still without being so terrible on offense.
I wrote in my scouting review that it's a rock fight and the Magic have bigger rocks, but I was wrong. What I meant was that defensively, they've been playing at a level all year that Cleveland could not keep up. But I didn't write. I picked Cleveland to win the series. Not that I think they're necessarily going to, but I did. But offensively, Cleveland's got the bigger rocks.
They do.
Yeah. Because of Donovan. Darius has been great against the Magic in the regular season. Not so much in game one, I think. I thought their big guys played really well. That was important, I think.
Mm-hmm. They bullied
the Pacers, the second last game of the regular season. They were good in game one. That's a big thing for them.
Yeah, no, it was big. But again,
and Mobley hitting threes was big.
Yep.
Mobley started hitting 2 threes. That kind of changed things up a little bit for Orlando as well, although I'd probably try to make him make 5 before you worry about it too much. Make him prove it. Make him prove he can do it consistently.
I mean, Orlando, look, I don't think they're going to roll over. I still think they have much to say in this series. I don't think it's going to be a sweep or anything. But we said they're playing with house money right now. No one had the Magic in the playoffs. Not a soul. So this is all great learning and reference points for them. And we'll see what they do in the offseason. 76ers, Knicks. Woo, boy. That was, listen, I wasn't at the game. And I probably, game two is tonight, so I can't get my media credential in time. If it comes back to the Garden, we'll head to head there for game five, which it very well could.
How would you get to MSG?
Oh, take the 2 train. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Two stops. It's express.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Two stops.
It's right there. Nice. It comes right out of MSG.
Right underneath. Yep. Don't have to do much. Switch my covering to the Knicks versus the Nets. It's a much quicker train ride. I mean, the Nets aren't. It's not that the Nets take what 28 minutes. I mean, it's not like it's that much further.
But either way, you're not worried about parking. Like the rest of the world, no. We have to worry about parking.
Hell no, parking. None of that stuff.
Great New York City. Yeah, I love that. I remember taking a train from Brooklyn. I saw the Nets play. The next day, I must have gone to Grand Central to go to Philly. And I just thought, man, we're starting to build trains in Florida.
Penn Station. No, you went to Penn Station, Brooklyn to Penn, because you went to Philly. Amtrak, right?
No, but I mean, from New York, you think I was in Penn?
Yeah, you were in Penn, yeah. Because you took the Amtrak to Philly, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know, it was an ice train, whatever it was.
Probably the Acela is probably what you took. Yeah, no doubt. No, when I went to cover Philly last year in the playoffs from Penn Station, that's a 90-minute train ride. And that's, listen, beautiful. Very lucky that I don't have to worry about that kind of thing where I am. You get to all those arenas in this area.
Yeah.
I mean, DC too. They stink and they're not in the playoffs. But if I had to go to DC, easy. No problem. Get on the train, be there quickly. Yeah. So I prefer the 45-minute flight to DC, much faster. Okay. The Garden was rocking. All the fans spilled out into the streets on 7th Avenue after, just going crazy as they like they did after game one of the regular season 3 years ago when they beat Boston in double overtime and the Bing Bong meme. This is just what it is. This city, David, as good as much as the Yankees have that history of winning, the Giants, the Jets, the Mets, and all that, when they are good, this is a Knicks town for sure. And there's nothing that gets this city and these people riled up so much like these New York Knicks. David, 1-0, they love Jalen Brunson. You know, he was the guy that Knicks fans were like, oh my God, I can't believe we spent $100 million. That deal looks pretty good today, doesn't it? Looks really, really good. Going to make his first All-NBA team, no doubt, at some point here in the next few weeks, which then means Supermax extension's coming, which now you got some decisions to make, New York, right?
Is he eligible this year for it?
He might be eligible this year for it, yeah, because this is already year two. So, yeah.
He signed a 4-year deal?
Yeah. So
maybe. I thought it maybe have to be three. I don't remember.
Either way, going into next year, starting when the calendar flips to the new calendar, so July 1 starts a new league year. So that'll be start of year three.
Correct. So, yeah. Then he can do it before he goes to the fourth year. I think
for
sure. Yeah, he'll get it.
Oh, for sure. So anyway, Knicks win that game. Let's talk about Joel Embiid. You had mentioned this in the games that last game, the play-in game against the Heat. You're like, I don't like how Embiid looks. He looks hobbled. And he did a play where he threw the ball at the backboard, caught it, went up for a dunk, landed on his leg.
Hold on. Second time out.
Yeah.
He wasn't by himself. That was a strategy. Like some guys do it in transition, no one's around.
Yes.
And that's kind of showing off. Yeah. This was, I have no other option here but to throw it off the board, go dunking on three guys.
Correct.
That was impressive. And then he landed bad.
Which, by the way, the ability of someone, and I don't think the average man understands how fucking huge Joel Embiid is, a massive human being. Like, humongous. And to have that dexterity and ability to, I was like, oh my God, that's the craziest thing. And of course, he landed bad, and everybody's like holding their breath. Oh shit, is this dude out?
He went right to the locker room.
Right, went straight to the locker room. We were like, man, this is not good. He came back in the second half, but David looked hobbled. I mean, he wasn't jumping at all, was not running. I don't think he's going to get better as the series goes on. That's just my opinion on this. What are you thinking about Embiid right now and his health status going forward this series?
I thought it should definitely have sat all of game one. And Nick Nurse said he's definitely not going to do it game two. And so I think it's not likely he's going to get better. I don't know the nature of his injury, and I'm not a doctor or a therapist or anything, a physio. But I think you got to get him healthy to win the series. So you might as well sit him out and let him get healthier anyway. But what do I know?
No, I'm with you. I agree. So, okay, that's the in beats of it. By the way, news just came out because the Sixers had their shoot around this morning because game two is tonight. Tyrese Maxey questionable because he has an illness. So we're not sure if he's going to play tonight, which that's another set of problems if they don't have Maxey, who, by the way, David, he got to the rim whenever he wanted
so
to.
So fast.
Eats every time. Nobody can stay in front of him on the Knicks.
Yeah. He's a really special talent, super talented player. Yeah. His ability to go full speed, right hand dribble, and then off foot, right hand. So it's right foot, right hand finish. It's hard to do. You don't jump as well that way, but you get to the rim faster. He's just elite. So I texted players this weekend that clip, one of the clips, and with the words like, this is what you're doing this summer. Yeah. My fast guys can do that. They got to practice it though.
Speed kills, man. And he got like a jetpack when that guy goes to the rim. But all that being said, the Knicks did what they do well, David. Offensive rebound, second chance points, and for a team that does not play with any kind of pace, because the Knicks were 30th in pace this season. And by the way, Philly's interesting, right? Because when Maxey's on the floor by himself, they will race much more. And even when Joel's there, he'll race by himself. They got better fast break points than the Sixers did in game one. And we talked about at the start of the show, teams that can be flexible and have some elasticity and switch things up. If I'm the Knicks, and I know I have a hobbled Embiid, why not try to get out on the break and play with some pace, right? Our defense is good. We get a stop. Just send those guys, man. Force Embiid to run, which he won't, and make Nick Nurse do something different.
Well, going in, I thought the physicality would take a toll. They don't run. They just don't run. So that's fine. If you don't want to change up, you're still making them wrestle more because of the way they play. That has a tax to it as well. You got to go at them. You got to challenge them. Mix up your defenses, which is what they're doing anyway. Get in his head a little bit. Try to anyway, so we can't predict it. Leave him on an island sometimes. Try to make him score a one-on-one pitch from the perimeter. Make him move. I'm sure they're thinking about these things. I don't think they're saying, let's line up and just beat them. They say a lot of that, but not when it comes to NBA. They got to do some special things, or he's just phenomenal.
And despite the health concerns, I mean, because he's so talented, he'll still score 30, and right, because he's just that good and find himself to the free throw line a dozen times. So there is still questions there to have. But again, I think the Knicks with Brunson, with Hart, with DiVincenzo, Mitchell Robinson, and Hartenstein, who again was excellent on Saturday. I just like the Knicks in the series, and game one didn't change my mind. I already picked on the win, and they did what they had to do in game one.
Yeah, and he's got to be healthier. We can't pick him.
Yeah, absolutely. Lakers-Nuggets. I thought Anthony Davis had one of his better games against Nikola Jokic. I thought LeBron was also pretty good in that game, but they were the only Lakers that did anything. D'Angelo Russell was 1-10. I mean, he had a bunch of threes, and he missed a ton of them. If not all. And the Nuggets, David, did what they do. That starting five, just they know where to be at all times. When Jokic has the ball, as you mentioned, they have their identity. When they have to get points, they know they're going to the Jokic-Murray pick and roll. And every time. And David, my favorite play in basketball now is the Jokic-Murray pick and roll that leads to the lob to Aaron Gordon at the rim. I'm like, oh, it's just my favorite thing. I'm like, here it comes, I see it. Like, and it's just.
So it's the pick and roll, and Gordon is typically in the corner or the short corner.
Yep.
And they throw an early short roll tag to Jokic. Mm-hmm. So his man is showing at the level of the screen because Murray can shoot. So now Jokic is coming downhill. So the guy from the baseline is lifting up to guard Jokic because he's so money at the floater, he can make a layup. Right. And then Gordon shoots that gap. He's just a gifted dude. But bottom line is they lost by 21 behind three. And they made eight of them, and they only took 29. And I go into it, I said, the math won't work till you get to the Celtics numbers, get to the 40s. And it's just not how they play. So they're probably going to do what the Cleveland Cavaliers did against the Spurs in 08. Do what we do and take it on the chin every game.
And we're getting swept or a gentleman sweep.
Yeah, unless Denver could play bad one of these games. And you're hoping for that. But I don't think it's a strategy that went to the series.
No. David, if you're a coach, how do you stop the Jokic-Murray pick and roll to avoid that Aaron Gordon lob dunk at the rim?
No easy thing. You can make it harder to make the short roll pass, so active hands. Jokic actually is good at the level of the screen. He's got really active hands, so you could try to get some deflections on that. You can be more aggressive on Murray. You can be less aggressive on Murray and let Murray score some. In fact, I would argue you're better off making Murray make the points than getting the ball to Jokic because he's going to kill you one or the other. I would have strategies where Jokic is going to score 10, Murray's going to score 50, but he might have some layups. I would live with that. We already know Jokic is just going to make the right decision so much more often than not. So that's not going to work.
Yeah. And then the other thing, the question I have about this is, you know, can LeBron and AD maintain their levels, right? I mean, they played well, but they had no help. What about the game where AD doesn't play well, right? And they got problems, right? There's just not enough on that Lakers roster, I don't think, to really bother this team.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Denver is very comfortable. They're just really in a comfortable spot. Their bench is suspect.
Yep.
It doesn't seem to matter.
Joe Watson played well last game. He was good last game.
Yeah, I guess. They just really know who they are, and they've got the Lakers number. The Lakers need to come out, you know, 38-15 first quarter. I normally don't care about that so much. It's a 48-minute game. But you got to make them uncomfortable. You got to make them questioning themselves. So you got to go to the drawing board and come up with something different. You can't just do the same thing you've always done. You can count on Russell playing better. That's smart. He's good. He's a really talented offensive player. Mm-hmm. But I think you got to change some things up, something to throw them off a little bit. And you start defending a margin instead of letting them defend the margin, you know?
Yeah. There was so the Lakers had a 12-point lead in that game. And you mentioned about the Nuggets being comfortable. At no point did I think the Nuggets were worried or panicked at any rate. I was like, oh, they're up 12. Great. Who cares? Like, you know, some of it is the confidence, of course, of we've done this before, right? We are champions. We know but they just know who they are as a team. When we are in trouble and we have to get good offense, they know exactly what they're running and where to go. And it's not just, yes, it's the Murray Jokic pick and roll, but it's the three other guys knowing where they have to be, specifically what their spacing has to be. And they're all ready to make the right decision, whether it's shoot, pass, cut, whatever the situation calls for. I'm like, that's, you know, it's a well-oiled machine. What do you do?
That's what it is. Yeah, you got to throw some sand in there or some sugar.
Yeah, to mess those gears up a little bit.
Right.
Suns, Wolves. So the Wolves beat the Suns for the first time all season, David. Anthony Edwards was a monster in that game. So, so good. Now, he had two fouls, or he got foul trouble early. And in the first quarter, they got him doing what he did in the three games they lost in the regular season, which was showing bodies, forcing him to make passes in the air, turn the ball over. He was doing that early. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I've seen this test before. I know what the answer is now. And none of that. There was no turning the ball over anymore, and he was just lighting it up. And anybody who knows Ant knows KD is his GOAT, and he had a great time talking trash to his GOAT because he was doing his thing, and KD can do nothing but laugh. Like, oh, kid's making shots. What's he supposed to do? It was actually a fun Ant experience, and for people who don't, you know, casual fans who may not know enough about him, you're like, oh, this guy's the next one. But David, as we said on our call this morning, all that being said, and let's point out these actual facts. Wolves were plus 13 in shot attempts, plus 14 in rebounds. Well, that's the game right now. If I get 14 more chances at the basket than you, I'm probably going to win, right? That's just how this game works. But still, all that being said, that does not deter me off my take that I think the Suns can beat this team. They just didn't have a good game one.
And Minnesota did.
Yes.
Nazreed was great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you see the picture I sent you guys of AP, Adrian Peterson?
Yes.
Don't they look like the same size?
They do, yeah.
AD Peterson's 6'1", maybe.
Well, so I'm thinking Ant was not in shoes at that point, so he was flat-footed, and Adrian was in shoes. Was that one?
Is he wearing high-heeled shoes? You know, I'm just saying, Anthony Edwards is so extraordinary, and he might only be, I've never stood next to him, I need to. He might be like 6'2". He may not be so tall.
6'4 is what he's listed at. As we all know, yeah. Everyone knows those media guides about NBA players' heights are, let's just say, they stretch the truth a bit.
I guess.
Here's what I know about Anthony Edwards, David, despite his height. He can jump out of the gym. That dude is such an explosive athlete.
So quick, powerfully built. Yeah, that's why he went number one. He's playing the way they thought he would play, and they need him to. He needs to be that guy. I thought Minnesota had a good edge about him. I thought Phoenix was kind of casual.
They were.
Like, you need to play with force against these teams. You got to play with force. And they didn't. But, yeah, I think Vogel's team will respond pretty well. If they play tonight or tomorrow night.
They get 2 days off, so they're tomorrow night.
Yeah, I was hoping it'd be tonight. Because I think it's a great series. Wasn't good. But I think it's going to be a good series.
Yeah, it'll have some moments. NBA Twitter was definitely going nuts for Ant-Man because he was, you know, there are a segment of fans who, and it's important, you know, we want as many fans as possible. This is what they love about basketball. They love the mano y mano aspect of it. Yeah. When a guy goes on a heater and he's talking his shit, and that's fine. Like, whatever. Like, if that's what brings you to the game, come one, come all. So Ant is your man. That is your guy that you are going to rally behind, because maybe nobody better in the league when he's on one who's gonna talk his talk. And listen, you got to be a competitive psycho MF-er to make this league. Like, or else you'll get killed. There's no other way around it. So kudos to Ant-Man and the Wolves. By the way, Mike Conley, as we predicted in your little roundup, not great in that game. He made one shot towards the end there. And that's a problem, I think, for them, because while Booker didn't play well, I think Booker and Beal can overpower Conley. They're just bigger than he is and can really cause problems. And they have to bring in Jordan McLaughlin as the backup. That's an area I think Phoenix can exploit going forward. So we'll see what they do there. All right, David, every year The Athletic does a poll with anonymous NBA players, and they ask, who's the best player in the league? Who's the this? Who's the most whatever? And most of the answers are what they are, and they've kind of been running for a while. David, I don't know if you know this, but among his peers, Rudy Gobert does not have a high favorability rating. Were you aware of this?
I was aware, although I've talked to teammates of his who do not share that sentiment.
I agree.
Yeah.
So anyway, the poll came out about who is the most overrated player in the league, and Rudy Gobert won it for another year in a row, whatever. And a lot of it comes down to this, and it's casual fans will say it, and former NBA players, current NBA players will say it, obviously, as we learned from this poll. How can a guy win 4 DPOIs, whatever it is, when he gets played off the floor in the postseason? And DeMarcus Cousins says this: you can't have a potential 4-time defensive player of the year who doesn't finish games. I'm never going to be okay with this. I see things in black and white. If you're the best defender on the best defensive team, you should never be off the floor. There should never be a scenario where you're not able to fit into the scheme. That doesn't make sense. How do we keep awarding this guy who can't even stay on the floor in the playoffs? That's mind-blowing to me. And I thought, ooh, Dave is the perfect person to talk to about this, because, David, defense is much more complicated than can a 7'2" center protect the rim and also race out to the corner to guard three-pointers. There's a lot going on defense, and I think oftentimes this is where the analytics comes in, and this is where people who watch games will say, and who don't believe in analytics as if it's a religion, nothing to believe in, it's just math, they'll get angry and say, yeah, you guys have to find and make up these silly numbers that no one's ever heard of, but my eyes tell me this guy can't be on the floor because they got to call a timeout and bring him off because he can't cover. And I'm like, nope, it's more to it. So David, let's break down a little bit why defense is so difficult, why Rudy's so good, and this misnomer of him being played off the floor in the playoffs.
He's got to go totally backwards, Gerard. He's played off the floor because of his ineffectiveness on offense. That's not the defense. That to say there aren't exceptions where the other team's got five small shooters or whatever on the floor and you don't really need rim protection so much. You're trying to defend a three. That's just like taking out, you know, Kareem because you're down three with 6 seconds left. I'm going to play my five shooters, you know? Mm-hmm. You're going to say Kareem wasn't very good on offense?
Right.
But because of how he is offensively, if you can guard him easier than he can guard you because of how you guys play and the way they can scramble to defend him inside, or the team's inability to really take advantage of him inside, which I think is often the case, well, then you just start factoring in what he brings on offense versus what we need and what he brings on defense. So that's why he'll get played off sometimes. Is they just need more effective offense. But was he doing it? The game was a blowout. Like what was he talking about? Mm-hmm.
It was overall just like, because again, he's in line according to the Bay Patriots to win another DPOY. So they're like, this guy again? They're like, he stinks. How's he, you know? And it's like, Rudy's an elite defender.
You can ignore advanced metrics. I choose not to. I think they tell us a lot. And his numbers are what they are. They're factoring all that kind of stuff in too. So, you can't have everything. There's guys aren't as good as him at protecting the rim, but can protect the perimeter pretty well. Great. But over the course of a game and a season, 82 games in a season, you'd like to have a guy that can really dominate the paint. Brook Lopez does a good job of that too. Those guys have amazing value. I don't know what it is with Rudy. I don't think it's the COVID thing. He's just a little bit different.
He's French, you know. People got a lot of hate for French people. French,
and they don't seem to have a problem. He's not a fan, but I don't care. As much as I love NBA players and talk to them all the time and all the stuff that I do with them, the serious, rational thinking young men, of which most of them are, they get him just fine. And I've coached more than a few who just acknowledge, just like Dwight Howard back in the day, they just know he's there. Same as Wemby. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to be taking out some games, although he's better offensively than Gobert. He can dribble, he can pass it. So, yeah, maybe he won't get played off the floor. But that's why Rudy is they can't take advantage of his offense as much as the other team can take advantage of the fact that he can't guard five guys at once at the rim and behind three. He's not super.
And that's the point, right? He can't be everywhere at once. I can't guard the three-point line and protect the rim at the same time. Right. Although Wemby might be able to do both. He's so damn long, he might be able to do both.
It's true. Great line.
Oh, my God. I love it. No, this is good stuff. And look, that size, we just talked about it, right? What did I say? The Wolves had 14 more shot attempts and were plus 13 on rebounds. Rudy Gobert. Big reason why that happened.
They were a game away. They were a game away from the top seed, and their best player is 22. Mm-hmm. Come on now. Rudy's made a big difference there. They're a relevant team. They have been for two years now.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you said it. You said the move to bring Rudy in was a bet on Anthony Edwards, right? Making a huge leap.
I wrote that at the trade. Yeah. Yeah. I wrote that you've given yourself 4 years to contend, whereas you're not with AE going from 19 to 23. You're not going to contend. This seems a contending team. Yeah. And waxed Durant, Beal, and Booker after they had been playing well in game one. So, they're right where they need to be. Phoenix has some answers, hopefully. It's a great series. Yeah. But, Rudy's done well for them. He had a great year this year.
For sure. All right, folks, we got game twos tonight. David will have a playoff piece coming out this week. And we'll be back on Thursday. By Thursday, we'll be game threes in. We might have some teams on the brink. Looking at you, Miami. Sorry, Heat fans. Might be on the brink come Thursday. All right, everybody. Take care.